or the devil. First thing that I'd do is I'd come off like I ever gave a damn about you. I'd let you catch a peek of all your greatest desires. Then I'd watch the flames in your eyes burn like hellfire. Find all the wolves in the land, and I'd make them fight each other tooth and nail and hand to hand. Find all the sheep, make them stir up the pot, 'cause once the wolves have killed each other, sheep are what I want. The devil walks among us, friends, I know this is true. And I don't know if he's red, and I don't know if he's blue. One thing that I know, need to take a look around. If I were the devil, this world wouldn't be my playground. Place that thorny crown on my
top of the
brow.
Second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Friday, November 3rd, 2023. Interesting stuff, you know, little rabbit trails that you can go down. Guerrilla warfare is an interesting study, you know, just the things that you can find floating around on Wikipedia. Guerrilla warfare is a form of unconventional warfare. What does that mean? In which small groups of irregular military, what is that? Such as rebels, partisans, paramilitary, you know, one man's freedom fighters, another man's terrorist, because there are pirates and emperors, but they're really the same thing. Personnel or armed civilians, including recruited children. Stick that one in the back of your mind for a second. Recruited children. Who would do such a thing? Who would use human shields both individually and as a, you know, in a group collectively? Who would do that? Use ambushes, sabotage, terrorism raids, petty warfare, or hit and run tactics in a rebellion, in a violent conflict, in a war, or a civil war to fight against regular military police or rival insurgent forces. So interesting stuff. Let me see. So let me skip down. So although the term guerrilla warfare was coined in the context of the Peninsular War in the 19th century, the tactical methods of guerrilla warfare have long been in use. That's an understatement. In the 6th century BC, Sun Tzu proposed the use of guerrilla-style tactics in the art of war. The 3rd century BC Roman general Quintus Fabius Maximus Verrucus is also credited with inventing many of the tactics of guerrilla warfare through what is today called the Fabian strategy. That's interesting, isn't it? There are the Fabians among us, but they're our friends, you know, they're our friends. Let's see, Arthur Wesley adopted the term guerrilla into English. He's an interesting character. Arthur Wesley, 1st Duke of Wellington. We had our own Michael Collins Piper, until we didn't. Skipping down in the early 20th century, Michael Collins and Tom Barry both developed many tactical features of guerrilla warfare during the guerrilla phase of the 1919 to 21 Irish War of Independence, etc., etc. That's an interesting discussion in itself. Let's see. Michael Collins, Irish leader, Wikipedia entry. He gained fame as a guerrilla warfare strategist, planning many successful attacks on British forces together with the Squad. That's interesting. The Squad, what is that? Not to be confused with the 9 progressive members of the United States House of Representatives, which were manufactured by Justice Democrats, which is an organization with close ties to, you know, the Young Turks contingent. And speaking of the Young Turks, what does the Young Turks represent? As some have noted, who was it, in fact? Not the, yeah. So from the Wikipedia entry, speaking of unconventional and irregular warfare, from the Wikipedia entry for the Young Turks, controversies, name controversy. The show's name, Young Turks, has been criticized and called for change due to the original Young Turks political movement in the Ottoman Empire being responsible for committing the Armenian Genocide, the Assyrian Genocide, and the Greek Genocide. Alex Galitsky, who works for the Armenian National Committee of America, stated, quote, "If a group decided to call themselves the Young Nazis and pitch themselves as a disruptor or anti-establishment news outlet, people would be rightly outraged. But we're Americans. We, you know, the world looks in, but we don't look out. So we're comfortably numb. It's okay." So the Squad is also an interesting... Is it an homage to something? Plausibly deniable as it may be, who knows? Anyway... Guerrilla warfare, irregular warfare. This is an interesting. I'll leave it at this for now. I think, you know, I was just sort of. Where is that? That's interesting. Where'd that go? Irregular military. I'm sorry. That's the Wikipedia entry I'm looking for, not irregular warfare. So irregular military, the section titled Irregulars in Today's Warfare. Again, the truth is just rattling around out there in plain view. Modern conflicts in post-invasion Iraq, the renewed Taliban insurgency in the 2001 war in Afghanistan, the Darfur conflict. These are irregular military forces in today's warfare. The rebellion in the north of Uganda by the Lord's Resistance Army and the Second Chechen War are fought almost entirely by irregular forces on one or both sides. That's interesting. So just listen to that. Again, think of, you know, what we've heard about how, let's say, the, you know, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, they're all recruiting children, right? Guerrilla warfare, including recruiting children. So irregular military Wikipedia entry, irregulars in today's warfare. So you hear all of these modern conflicts are fought almost entirely by irregular forces on one or both sides. Isn't that interesting? Because that, you know, if you read the advent of net war, which I've talked about many, many times, by John R. Aquila and David Ronfeld back in 1996, again, you know, speaking of Army 21, Army After Next territory, it's interesting how this leaderless network, sprawling leaderless networks concept, guerrilla warfare, is the thing that's emerging. And there are these opaque holographic structures and we can't find them. And, you know, they use human shields, and then all of a sudden we have to carpet bomb somewhere and go scorched earth because they're everywhere. Kind of like, what's happening over in, you know, the Gaza area right now. Anyway, all's fair in love and war, right? So almost all of these conflicts, modern conflicts, are fought almost entirely by irregular forces on one or both sides, typically both sides. But then listen to this. This is Wikipedia. Irregular military Wikipedia entry under irregulars in today's warfare. After I read this, I expect it to disappear in fairly short order. The CIA's Special Activities Center, and remember, in one of these entries, I forget which one, but in some of this journey that I'm talking about, you can find British entry. Go listen to, for example, Fritz Springmeier talk about how the Nazi intelligentsia that was recruited initially was, they were all British double agents. Go read Anthony Sutton's work along those lines, and many, many others. What? No. And then think about the fact that the British Security Coordination, the BSC, was instrumental in setting up the OSS, which, you know, was the phoenix out of the fiery ashes of which the CIA was born. And I'm sure that British, you know, intrigue was cut off. Those ties were cut off subsequently, except maybe not. And it goes back further than that, but I'm just saying that's all just right out there in plain view. So, back to the CIA. The CIA's Special Activities Center, not SAD anymore, now SAC, is the premier American paramilitary clandestine, what does all of that mean, unit for creating and combating irregular military forces. So let me just put those sentences together again. Modern conflicts, I'm paraphrasing this one, the first paragraph. Modern conflicts are fought almost entirely by irregular forces on one or both sides. Next paragraph, first sentence. The CIA Special Activities Center is the premier American paramilitary clandestine unit for creating or combating irregular military forces. Can we put one and one together? Can we do the math on that? Maybe we should throw in covert regime change operations over the past, you know, 80 years or so. So, anyway, continuing, SAD, I thought it was SAC. Anyway, someone hasn't updated that yet. The CIA has not updated that yet. SAD paramilitary officers created and led successful units from the Hmong tribe during the Laotian Civil War in the 1960s and 70s. They also organized and led the Mujahideen as an irregular force against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan in the 1980s, remember Operation Cyclone, right? As well as the Northern Alliance as an irregular insurgency force against the Taliban, which was an outgrowth of the Mujahideen, essentially, with the U.S. Army Special Forces during the war in Afghanistan in 2001, and organized and led the Kurdish Peshmerga with U.S. Army Special Forces as an irregular counterinsurgency force against the Kurdish Sunni Islamist group Ansar al-Islam at the Iraq-Iran border, and as an irregular force against Saddam Hussein during the war in Iraq in 2003. So, I mean, all of that together, I think, pretty much stands on its own, hopefully, if you understand who is creating chaos, who is orchestrating and engineering chaos. Operation Chaos lives on. MH Chaos. Anyway, those are a few fun things to just kind of look into, maybe if you have time over the weekend. Yeah. You run into the stay behinds somewhere also in this conversation on the irregular military, regular military units that use irregular military tactics. Originally, the United States Special Forces were created to serve as a cadre around which stay behind resistance forces could be built in the event of a communist victory in Europe, right? Sure. Stay behind. The most famous of these clandestine stay behind networks was the Italian Operation Gladio, acknowledged by Italian Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti on October 24, 1990. Like I said, October 24 is a fun date in history. Secret armies. It's just interesting. The more you sort of investigate this stuff, the more you see, you know, everything old is new again and some things never change. And the truth is staring us in the face, out there in plain sight. We just don't want to see it, most of us. And if you talk about this stuff, you know, in polite society, then you get thrown out of polite society because you're not supposed to talk about this stuff. It's inconvenient. It's uncomfortable. But I'll tell you what, it's reality. Frenemies. Yesterday's friend is today's enemy is tomorrow's friend and vice versa, because you know the enemy of our enemy is our friend and so on and so on. It's just all murky. Who's in charge? Who decides? Is this what the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would have? I digress. Let's go back to the phones. Rhonda in Missouri, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Rhonda. Hey,
how are you?
Good. You sent me an email. I've been meaning to reply. I have not yet. I apologize.
Oh, well, you know, that was, I thought that was interesting how, you know, like the backstory, but here's a different thing. Well, I wanted to say two things. One, you were talking about things I almost said born in the USA.
Yeah.
Made
sure.
In the USA, right?
Yeah.
So like, two things. I had a pair of slippers that I bought, Acorn, A-C-O-R-N, and I had them for a while, so I threw them away, and I'm like, well, I really liked them, so I ordered another pair, and if you go to their website, it says Acorn Slippers and Sandals, acorn.com USA. Then I get them, and I didn't order directly from the company because they're more expensive, but they're based out of Maine, and I got them, and they said made in China.
Yeah, that's happening.
So that was weird.
There's all of this, you know, sophistry that's employed to say, you know, they're assembled or, you know, made with materials from here or whatever. It's you know, gets back to the language that I think Glenn and I were talking about when I think of Sears and the Craftsman brand in particular that used to, I remember I had a wrench that I took back to a local Sears outlet and said it broke, and they didn't ask any questions. They just replaced it. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back after this short break.
Thank you. Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty. Whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen, these courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. Illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Real quick, email the email address to email me for this broadcast, RWR, as in Road Warrior Radio, RWR host at therwr.com. Rhonda knows. There's that. You know, I was saying it reminds me of the Sears thing. I took a Craftsman wrench into a Sears location store, I believe doesn't exist anymore now, and said it broke, and before I could say another word, the whatever you call them, representative person, employee, walked over and grabbed another one and gave it to me without a word said, basically. And you know, that was what the Craftsman guarantee, the lifetime guarantee, represented. Now we have the word warranty, which is not the same thing. And what's in a word? I wonder you know. So a guarantee, by definition, something that assures a particular outcome, a promise or assurance, especially one given in writing, that attests to the quality or durability of a product or service, a pledge that something will be performed in specified manner, a guarantor, a guarantee, to assume responsibility for the debt, default, or miscarriage of, etc., etc., etc. There's more, you get the point. Warranty, a representation, especially in writing, made by a seller or company, a purchaser of product, that a refund, repair, or replacement may be made if the product or service proves defective or unsatisfactory, especially with a given time period. It's a watered-down version of a guarantee, which reminds me of that scene in Tommy Boy. If you've seen the movie, probably, you know, I can do a certain thing and stamp guaranteed on the box. I have time. It's that kind of thing. It's different. And so it's sophistry. If it was a guarantee, it would be called a guarantee. But that was what, you know, that was what we used to. I think it's just indicative of where we've come from and where we are now, the sophistry. And so my question basically is this. If a company is willing to do, you know, to be that nakedly dishonest, what you talked about with the Acorn slippers, for example, Rhonda, I mean, saying it's USA branding, actually made in China.
Yeah,
if companies,
go ahead. Sorry.
If they're willing to be that nakedly dishonest, why would anyone ever support that company? I'm not talking about you. I'm just saying, when we find these things out, you know, doesn't confirmation bias tell us, or tell the leadership of those companies that their dishonesty is okay, or at least palatable to the sleepy sheepies, the unwitting masses? No, they don't care. They'll buy it anyway.
Yeah, I just did a search for where they made, and it came up with their website again. So it's hard to find.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is I bought a generator, and you know, I'm not familiar with watts, voltages, and stuff. So I did the calculator, you know, to say what running watts and all that. So I told the calculator, whatever it was, the website, what I was wanting to plug in, and it suggested that I get a Champion. And I wanted it to be quiet because we have one that's, like, super loud. And so I bought the inverter, dual fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And Champion, I remember growing up, was an American brand as well.
Yep.
And I ordered it from a co-op over in Illinois, and it's because it was a really good deal. Oh my gosh, I saved like $300 compared to $200 compared to Amazon. I'm like all over it. But anyway, I got that box, and it says made in China.
Yeah. So to your point about the Acorn slippers, same kind of thing. I just pulled up DuckDuckGo. And if I type in Acorn slippers made in, the autocomplete suggestions are made in USA, made in China, and this one, where are Acorn slippers made? And then, are Acorn slippers made in China? Are Acorn slippers made in the USA? So the point is, those usually are based on prior search.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are asking the same question. And so,
yeah.
Again, this is what should be normalized. Honesty in business should be normalized, and dishonesty should be, you know,
I don't know,
avoided.
Chris. I mean, we wouldn't be able to buy anything if we wanted
exactly.
to buy
it.
Yeah, can I make another comment
yeah.
About something
yep.
else? Okay, thanks.
Definitely. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back after this short break.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion.
Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pauti Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man, still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Yeah! Welcome back. Can I just make a comment before you share your other thought real fast, Rhonda?
Yep.
You won't lose it, right?
No, I wrote it down.
Okay. So I'm curious, you know, when I see... So Acorn, the story of Acorn, acorn.com/pages/our-story-hyphenated. The story of Acorn... Acorn.com USA. Acorn.com USA is in the metadata. I'm just, you know, that reminds me of climate science. things like that. Why do you have to stick USA on the back of it? It's disingenuous. It's dishonest. It's sophistry. So that's interesting. Who is David Quinn? I wonder what happens when you, you know, speaking of power elite stuff, David Quinn stitches leather to the bottom of a wool sock for Christmas presents in Fayette, Maine. The slipper sock is born. I wonder, you know, if we go back a little further in time, who is David Quinn? I don't know. I also wonder about Acorn. I think Acorn is interesting. It's not the Association of Community Organizers for Reform Now that Andrew Breitbart exposed. I wonder what that, how that muddies search, because we don't talk about Acorn International much these days. Anyway, Honest Brands, honestbrandreviews.com has a review of Acorn slippers. And I haven't read through it entirely, but it looks like, I don't know, maybe that's interesting. Where did I see something? Let's see. Anyway, I think that might be interesting, but it looks like they go to great lengths to try to portray something that's, I think, dishonest. And anyway, I have no particular animus toward China or the fact that they're very good at replicating things. There are some issues, you know, the fact that things seem to get imitated very, very quickly, which is why we went to patent pending instead of, you know, here's the patent. By the time it's issued, it's already been copycatted, sometimes in the same factory. Anyway, those things notwithstanding, David Rockefellers of the world all seem to agree that those people and their methods are very, very good at duplicating or imitating things for very inexpensively. Maybe there's an application for that somewhere, but it seems to me not in keeping with what I would call Americana or the American way of things. You know, it seems antithetical or un-American. And so this drive to move everything to China, and then there's the whole idea that you can manufacture things thousands of miles away, throw them on a, you know, stick them in a Costco container, throw them on a barge somewhere or something and ship them thousands of miles away. And somehow that's less expensive than making them here. Something is desperately wrong with this picture, in my humble estimation. So the fact
maybe
that,
it has
you
to
know,
do with the fact that we owe, you know, we owe them something. I don't know.
Maybe.
We owe China something, and we're...
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, it's all, you know, in my mind, money's just a thing. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's... But the other thing I wanted to talk about was I found... I was doing a search, and I was looking to see... to get more information on the Balfour Declaration.
Uh-huh.
And I found an article, if you type
Milner in... Milner Declaration? Just kidding.
Yeah. The Forgotten Truth. Yeah, the Forgotten Truth.
Huh?
And apparently there were two men, I don't know who, and I can't remember who initiated, I've slept since then, but how do you say it? C-H-A-I-M? Chaim? Chaim?
Chaim Weissman?
Chaim. How do you get...
Chaim.
Oh, the C is silent.
Yeah. Chaim.
Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know H after C is silent. Anyway, so Chaim Weizmann and then Nahum Sokolow.
Uh-huh.
You know, are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And how he was a diplomat. But here is the thing. This whole thing could have been avoided if King Sharif Hussein had made a private deal with somebody named McMahon, mm-hmm. and because it was private, he didn't go and secure you know, the U.S., England, France, Italy, and I think China at the time. I don't know. He didn't secure any assurances, and, you know, from those other countries. So he failed. And he was he from Syria or something? I can't remember. Anyway, if that whole thing had been more public instead of private, we probably wouldn't be in this situation. But mm-hmm. is that where exactly Zionism comes from?
What do you mean? Where exactly Zionism comes from?
Well, I mean the terminology. Is that when the name of Zionism first came into play?
Popularly, I think that's sort of what's believed, but no, it goes back further than that. In public circles, my understanding is that, yeah, basically the Herzl, you know, World Zionist Congress that convenes in 1897 is kind of where that suddenly kicks off. And I think if you do, let me just do it real fast, Engram, a Google Engram search for fun, because it's fun. Zionism, I've talked about this recently, but there are all of the explainers. It starts around 1900, and then it explodes after, during and after World War II. There's a little brief explosion after World War I, and then during and after World War II, and it subsides. But right after the World Zionist Congress meets or convenes in 1897, the first meeting, these things are all cooked up in back rooms and then rolled out to the public, basically. I mean, it's evidence of the Rhodes Milner roundtable stuff that people have talked about, you know, guys like Quigley have written about. So Balfour Declaration, Wikipedia entry, I think still has, so drafting, down under the section titled drafting on the Wikipedia entry, even, people say, why do you use Wikipedia? I'm just saying, even the pedestrian version of this story includes, under drafting, it says declassification of British government archives has allowed scholars to piece together the choreography of the drafting of the declaration. Again, piece together the choreography, Orwell, politics in the English language comes to mind, and the idea that the inflated style itself is a kind of euphemism. The great enemy of clear language is insincerity. And when people do this kind of stuff, when there's a gap between one's real and one's declared aims, he says, people move to this kind of language like a cuttlefish spurting out ink. Anyway, so back to the Wikipedia entry, Balfour Declaration. The drafting began with Weissman's guidance to the Zionist drafting team on its objectives in a letter dated 20 June 1917, one day following his meeting with Rothschild and Balfour. Let's see, skipping down, a month after the receipt of the much reduced July 12 draft from Rothschild, Balfour proposed a number of mainly technical amendments. The two subsequent drafts included much more substantial amendments. The first in the late August draft by Lord Milner, Alfred Milner, one of the original five members of Lloyd George's war cabinet. So next paragraph, subsequent authors have debated who was the primary author, who the primary author really was. In his posthumously published 1981 book, The Anglo-American Establishment, Georgetown University history professor Carol Quigley explained his view that Lord Milner was the primary author of the declaration. And more recently, William D. Rubenstein, professor of modern history at Irish with University Wales proposed Aimery. And anyway, you know, I've usually mentioned Quigley's point about Milner, and we can split hairs, but the point is, yeah, this is a thing that's obviously publicly we can agree that this is a thing concocted by at most a handful of people, and this is the beginning, and it's British intrigue primarily. It's these, you know, Rhodes Milner types and the guys who openly said we want to recolonize the world, and that was the beginning of this thing that we call Israel today, that is, I would say, a biblical counterfeit. So whoever was primarily responsible or the primary author, there are these backroom deals, and this term Zionism suddenly starts to come into fashion. And Alison Weir reminds us of Dorothy Thompson, who at one point was the second most influential woman in America, second only to the First Lady, Eleanor Roosevelt. And then she, you know, why has history forgotten her? Because she said, when it comes to Zionism, and she apparently at one point was close to Chaim Weizmann himself, but she said that Zionism was a recipe for perpetual war. How convenient. And mm-hmm. then suddenly history forgets her. So I think, you know, the term was incubating in these back channel discussions. And it really, in my understanding, you know, again, around the time of Pike's letter to Mazzini, this whole plan for what we used to call the World Revolutionary Movement really starts to be formulated, I think, with, you know, demonic influence and demonic help. At the same time, Pike's letter, all of a sudden, you know, 1875, 4 years later, we get the official creation of the Theosophical Society, and those things are closely linked. So I think it was all sort of formalized around that time, the late 19th century. And that's when the term really sort of came into view, and then was, you know.
Well, you know how in the Bible it talks about God was telling people to these kings, he'd say, go and kill this group of people over here, the Ammonites and the, you know, Amalekites, and you know, those names are like really hard to remember, but
yeah.
It's because they're evil, right?
Well, yes, but my conjecture is that it's more than that. You know, yeah, the Amalekites, that's 1 Samuel 15 territory, I believe. And you know, God was upset with them, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? Yeah. I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel. That's, you know, Jacob Israel, for those listening. This is just, again, my perspective. In that he obstructed him, Israel. See, this is interesting language. Actually, let me go to the King James. And I will say something on translations. Can we skip the break, sir, please? And we got James holding, so I got to do that too. Okay. All right. So King James, 1 Samuel 15, 1 and 2. Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now, therefore, hearken thou unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him, Israel. Isn't that interesting? Him, not them, in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. That's pretty scorched earth. So, yes, evil in opposing Israel coming out of Egypt, but also, as I have mentioned, you know, most recently, when Jeremy and I did a couple of co-hosting things, or not co-host, when we were mutual guests back on the 25th of October, he on this broadcast, I on his, we talked about this a little bit. My conjecture is the Old Testament, basically in these what look like genocidal campaigns, it's not just the evil, it's also preventing the devil the opportunity to try to say, take credit for God's work in the birth of Jesus of Nazareth in any sort of way. So, you know, we talked about the serpent seed doctrine thing a little bit, that controversy, and it is controversial. And I think there's an intentional, it's kind of like the anti-Semitic stuff, that term being used to muddy the waters and make people look away from something. I think the serpent seed doctrine thing has been muddied by the William Branham types to intentionally lead people away from investigating for themselves and appealing to the Holy Spirit to say, you know, please make sense of this for me. But the genocidal thing specifically that you're talking about, in my humble estimation, is the big picture there is preventing the devil the opportunity to try to take credit for the birth of Jesus, which is why after he's born, Jesus himself says, you've heard it said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. Today I give you a new command, love your enemy. Why did he say that? In my mind, yeah. It's because the purpose of those campaigns has passed. He was born, and so that purpose has passed. No need to do that anymore.
The other thing is, King Solomon, he had everything, you know, because when he was made king, God asked him, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe, oh, he asked God, how should I run this thing, you know, and he asked for wisdom and all that.
Second Chronicles and, 1, yeah, God yeah. appeared to Solomon and said, ask for anything.
And he got it.
Want. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I still think that would hold true today. It's just that you, when you ask, you would know where it was coming from.
Yeah.
So, but he went...
Second Chronicles and First Kings.
How many wives? 700, 300 concubines. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
From all over. And it's like, dude, what are you, bored?
Well...
Why are you doing that? You know?
He explains that's Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, explains. Okay, see, now you're jumping around on me. I have a hard time connecting different things, but yeah, go ahead.
Why Solomon did it, I think, is really all sort of explained in Ecclesiastes. And then it's interesting, okay. He concludes, but beyond this, you know, be warned, the writing of many books is endless, excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is... fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person.
Yeah.
God will bring every act of judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Interesting, yeah. The wisest man who ever lived said that.
Yeah. And so he was off doing his thing, and then that's when God was like, okay, we're gonna, because I made a deal with your dad, David,
yeah.
Then I'm going to give you one tribe, and I'm going to spread it out. Those people were always fighting. It's crazy. I'm like, but But I'm kind of wondering, like, who are, like, with this whole, you know, Zionism thing, it's like, which group of people are those, and does it, could anybody ever find out?
And that's interesting.
Coming full circle, you know?
This gets back to, in my opinion, Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 territory and Ezra Pound's technique of infamy, inventing two lies, getting you arguing heatedly over which one is true.
Well, I know we don't need to know, but I would be curious if, you know, like we talked about how God said, go kill the whole thing, and Saul never took his advice, so Saul...
Not entirely. But it wasn't his fault, it was the people's fault. Just kidding.
Yeah, he had to go to a person that could conjure up the dead in Samuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Samuel comes up and he's like, why are you bothering me or whatever?
Yeah.
Anyway, he's, it's just interesting because God wouldn't let, because he would, I don't know how they talked to him. I mean, I don't know, you know, because it was, I don't know how people, back then, because Jesus hadn't been, you know, the Holy Spirit wasn't here. So is it audible? I mean, it's all, you know, probably thinking about it too much, but I was just curious.
That is, I think, territory for another day. We're running short on time, and I was going to try to grab James real quick. So.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call. Have a great weekend. Okay.
You're welcome, Rhonda. You too.
All right, bye.
I want to come back to that later, maybe next week. Back to the phones in the interest of time. James in Vancouver, thanks for calling. Welcome. Good morning.
Well, you know, November 22nd, 1963, the anniversary is coming up, and Alex J. Heidel and his mail order rifle caused all those problems. You could always interview me on your radio show, and I provide enlightenment with lots of occult goodies, but you probably Zionism and the Unitarianism came out of the same place, Hungary.
Yeah, amen.
So
right on.
Trust the that's my blood, and some of my relatives actually bury their family in crypts, So all things are possible in Hungary.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting that Hungary doesn't like George Soros? Please don't come back.
Well, that's a family thing, you see. My uncle looks like George Soros. In Hungarian, we pronounce it Soros.
Okay.
So some of these Israeli girls were bothering me in Taiwan. They say, who are you? I said, who are you? She says, well, we're from Israel. I said, well, my uncle looks like George Soros. Well, what's your uncle's name? So I told him, that's Jewish. I said, really? All right, I'll let you go.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
Yeah, talk to you later. Bye now.
Hey, don't forget to roll your clocks back, because that's what we do these days. Anyway, I hope it was informative. I hope you have a great weekend. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.